I am Arate. Roland, what's up, brother?
Arate, what's up, man? Good to see you.
Thanks for coming on the podcast. Thanks for making the drive out here to Eastvale, man. I appreciate you, dude.
Absolutely. It's the first time I've been in Eastvale.
Yeah? Really?
And I was like, Eastvale, it sounded familiar.
Did you see the cows?
Man, I saw cows. You know, I saw cows. It actually took me back because it's not too far from Chino.
Yeah.
And the last time I was out here, I did a Spartan race that like
it just
fucked me all up. The Chino, it was like some national park.
Yeah. It's right there. It's crazy because when people come, depending on where they come like to the nice side of Eastvale, or they come from like kind of like where the cows are. So every time people come, like, dude, where the fuck am I?
Like, that's, you know, like Corona, right? you smell all it just stinks.
Well, it's crazy because when we first came to Eastvale, like, obviously it was like a growing city, right? It's going to be a new city. And then like a lot of the cows have been moved. In fact, like a couple blocks away, there used to be cows there. And then they moved it. They built a lot of houses, a lot of industrial buildings and things like that. So it's getting better, man. But, you know, it's where I live, man. So don't hate shit.
Yeah. That's like, so that definitely not a place to live if you're vegan.
Dude, there used to be cows, like I said, two blocks away. And then like people would like mess with the cows. Like it would just be like at the fence because you could literally be right there.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, and then, dude, everyone on Halloween used to just fucking wear like, you know, be dressed up as a fucking cow.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I'm like, man, I don't know. You know, be like, yo, I don't know if it's the cows or it's you that smells, you know what I'm saying? But anyway, dude, I appreciate you coming on the podcast. So, guys, I've known Roland for quite some time now. He is an Arate brother to me. We've known each other, I think, for what, maybe 2 to 3 years now.
Yeah.
And the interesting part is we're in a very interesting phase in our lives and our careers because we are actually teaming up. And we're doing some business together as well. But, dude, I'm just glad to have you on. I think I told you this, too. We're kind of, like, given the situation and the events that's happening in the world.
Yeah.
I love this fucking platform because it's. I feel like I have a lot of control over it, and it's not regulated yet, right?
Absolutely.
Like, podcasting is not regulated. It's not manipulated by algorithms and all this stuff yet. Right.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm saying, like, I always encourage people to do podcasts. I was actually just encouraging to do yours with your, you know, with your firm. But in addition, like, we could just do whatever the fuck we want.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the best part.
Yeah, man. And like I, you know, we, you know, our goal here is to clearly we want to get to know you, get a little background about yourself. So the audience who doesn't know you can get to know you a little bit. But at the same time, I kind of just, hey, man, I just want to have a conversation with you, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
You know, not so scripted and all that good stuff. So anyway, just real quick.
Yeah.
Let's get to know you a little bit, where you grew up. You're obviously a veteran, and thank you for your service, by the way. I've actually had a pretty steady amount of guests, veterans, the past few episodes, actually, between JP, between Nick. You know, I've had Andrew, and now I got you. You guys, you guys are just a different breed, man. So I
appreciate that.
Yeah, man. So let's go back to where it all began, where you're from, and then how it translated to your service, and then to what you do now.
Yeah, well, all began in the mean streets of Inglewood, California. That's where young Roland was born, Daniel Freeman Hospital, and so, you know, nowadays I tend to get pretty crazy every now and then. I just blame it on Inglewood.
Yeah.
Now my, you know, I, as a young kid, like, you know, Inglewood, LA, it's not the safest place to raise a family. So my parents, they moved all the way out to the desert. Not sure if you know where like Palmdale, Lancaster is.
Yeah.
So you go Palmdale, Lancaster, go a little bit further in a little town called Lake Los Angeles. Like,
okay,
if you were to see the place now, it's like full of like, dude, meth freaking shacks. And like, there's nothing out there.
Oh, you said it first. I was about to say, that's where all like the meth heads and stuff are.
Absolutely. Like there ain't even a Walmart out there. Like, you know, they got this like small little market, Saddleback Market. And that's where people do most of their shopping at. And so, but as a kid growing up, man, I had a blast, bro. Like my parents didn't have money. Like my parents really struggled financially. And, we didn't have like the things that a lot of kids have now. Like my kids, man, they're blessed. They're spoiled as shit, dude. Growing up, like we had, I got so damn happy when I got a bicycle. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing with me and my little brother. I got a my brother's 2 years younger than me. Mm-hmm. And we used to always ride our bikes everywhere. Like, you know, that was our thing. And, you know, we didn't have a lot of technology, anything like that. My parents, like I said, were poor. So we had to be resourceful, you know, growing up. We, you know, had a football, and that's how we spent most of our time, you know,
with
the neighborhood friends. So,
dude, shit's different nowadays, right?
It is.
We used to bike around, I don't know, with me, play basketball at the playground. We used to drink water from the fucking hose, right?
Like crazy.
Yeah, things are different.
Always on a given evening, it didn't matter if it was a weekend or weekday, you peep out the street and all you see is like two-hand touch, you know, in the street playing ball with your friends.
Yeah.
I can't even tell you the last time I saw that.
Yeah.
Like, even in the parks now, you don't even see it too much. It's like, damn. Well, especially not now because of COVID, but even prior to COVID. Yeah. But yeah, that was, so we were like, growing up was kind of different for us. And then once I got out to, you know, high school, we moved out to Palmdale. That was like considered more of the city. And, you know, I grew up, you know, really into sports. I was a knucklehead a little bit too. I got into a little bit of trouble, but the sports kept me straight. Football, baseball, and wrestling, that it just really got me through school for sure.
Hey, you look like you'd fuck someone up on the mat.
I love that, man. You know, that's how wrestling, when you like, you slam someone down and you hear that. The referee, when he blows his whistle and taps on them. Yeah. I used to live for that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you do jiu-jitsu? Yeah.
No. I did wrestling, and then after high school, I got into Muay Thai.
Kickboxing. Oh, nice. Okay.
So I did Muay Thai, fought, didn't make it to getting my pro card, because another crazy story. That's a whole nother story, but I was at a party, and I cut my foot on a piece of glass, and I think my Muay Thai career just
ended there.
Damn. Yeah. It was just a lot of other things going on, but that's what kind of like put it off. But yeah, so I got into that, you know, sports really just kept me straight in high school. And then right around towards the end of high school, my parents, they went through a divorce. And,
how was that for that you and your brother?
Man. Well, for me, it was right around my senior year. And, man, for me, it didn't affect me too much because I went right into the Marines, like right out of high school. Like I was still in high school when I enlisted in the Marines. And that was right around the time when my parents were getting divorced. I left. This was right around when 9/11 was happening.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
But my brother, he's 2 years younger than me. It hit him hard.
Bro. Yeah.
It, because at the same time, me and my brother, we were best friends growing up. Mm-hmm. We were really tight. And I left to serve my country. Uh-huh. And then my parents split up.
So obviously it was hard on him. He lost his brother. Him. Then kind of lost, you know, didn't lose your parents, but, you know, they split. Yeah.
And he, he hit the deep end right from there. He got into hanging out with the wrong crowd, got into drugs, and never rebounded, man. He's a two-time felon now. Just constant. Like he's just had nothing but uphill battles from that point. But it kind of started from that point right there. And that was, you know, really unfortunate, you know, time. Mm-hmm. I joined the Marine Corps.
How did you deal with that? I know you went to the Marines and that probably kept you distracted. But how did kind of you deal with it? Did you kind of just put it out? You know, your frustration, or maybe just you were just really distracted with, you know, being in service.
Yeah, that's okay. A great question. I think, just like you said, I think for me it kind of distracted, because if you look at the timing, this was 2001. This was prior, like 9/11 happened when I was in boot camp. I still remember the exact time. I was on the rifle range when 9/11 happened, and I remember our drill instructors took us aside and they told us, our nation's been attacked. And it didn't even seem real. For like, I thought the drill instructors were fucking with us.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was just a part of the whole boot camp. Like, yeah. That they were just like creating. Like,
you guys ready
like,
or what?
Yeah, to scare the shit out of us, to fuck with us. You know, boot camp, it's a mind, it, all kinds of mind games. So
yeah.
That's what I thought it was. And then we knew, you know, a couple moments later, we had the company commander, still remember his name, Captain Worthen, came and sat us all down and then just briefed us and told us, hey, you know, earlier this morning, the Twin Towers were attacked, and there's been multiple terrorist attacks. Mm-hmm. We knew at that point, shit was about to get real. I mean, that...
what was going through your guys' head? Like, you and your buddies, like, you know?
Well, we thought it was really, man, it was freaking stressful. Because at this point, we weren't really at what, like, the previous war before this was Desert Storm. And that wasn't too crazy. That was a pretty mellow conflict. But all that we knew about war was what we saw on TV or in the movies.
Yeah.
And that's all bad shit. People get blown up, like shit's crazy. So that's all we knew.
Yeah.
And then we get all this, all they're briefing us on is like chemical weapons, you know, making sure we're trained on our gas masks because they got like sarin gas and all these like nuclear biological chemicals. And we're like, oh shit, dude, that's some scary shit to pick up when you're an 18-year-old, like right out of high school.
Yeah.
You know, I damn near just barely became an adult. And then it was just really crazy. And then, you know, so I graduated boot camp and then originally I joined in the reserves.
Okay.
Cause my whole plan was to go to college. I was going to go to the University of Hawaii. I was going to play football and I was just going to join the Marine Corps reserves and do it kind of like a part-time thing to still serve. But I knew after 9/11 happened, my plans were over shifted because I never actually became a Marine reservist after that. Like we went, got called straight to active duty. We started training in Camp Pendleton and we spent about almost a year at Camp Pendleton getting ready. We did a workup in order to go to Iraq. And then right around January, February of 2003, then we deployed. Mm-hmm. For the invasion of Iraq back in 2003.
So it sounded like it kind of wasn't a choice at that point, right?
No, not at
all. For anyone that wanted was trying to go to the reserves.
Yeah. If you generally know that, like, you know, when you enlist, whether it's active duty or reserves, you know that you're signing up for that.
Okay.
Like, you're on call. If shit were to hit the fan, that's what the reserves are for.
Got it. Like, okay.
And at that point, we had two wars that we were fighting at this time, Afghanistan and Iraq. So I remember like the 1st Marine Division, they're based out of Camp Pendleton. The entire division, it's pretty much the entire base of Camp Pendleton. It was like a ghost town because almost the entire base was deployed overseas.
Shit.
Like it was.
So it was like empty because everyone was just like. It was
empty. Everyone was overseas fighting a war or multiple wars. So like. I just knew there, and like that was, I think one of the scariest points of my career because it was like the fear of the unknown. You don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
Like we just know what we knew of war. Like I said, what we saw in the movies, and it's all bad shit. You know, we're expecting like to just being prepared to dive, like getting wills together and stuff like that. As an 18-year-old, like. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy.
One thing to watch it and another thing to live it. Clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Mm-hmm. And then, I remember like then we deployed, got ready for the invasion of Iraq. And then we started in, you know, the Kuwait-Iraqi border. And you know, what's crazy is I don't even think we were really prepared for that logistically.
Mm-hmm.
And like, what I mean by that is, like our equipment, I still remember the vehicles that we were given.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm a Marine at the time and I'm a machine gunner.
Uh-huh.
I'm a machine gunner. So I'm the dude that is on top of a Hummer with a machine gun.
Oh man. So, you know what's funny? Every time I watch a movie, I always think to myself, man, that's a bad motherfucker. I'm like, fuck. You know, like he's just like so like, you know.
Yeah.
Man, dude. Yeah,
it's that was...
You're a badass motherfucker, bro.
that was wild, dude. It was... And you know what's crazy is... So when we're prepping our vehicles, we didn't... It's like we didn't have enough vehicles to suit, like, the invading force that we were taking into Iraq. So we had, like, some of our vehicles, they didn't have, like, machine gun mounts. And so we're over here, like, being resourceful and building platforms with plywood reinforce our vehicles to set up machine gun mounts on them. And then they weren't armored Humvees. So they had a very soft armor, even our trucks that carried all our troops. Shit. We call them troop carriers, like these big 7-ton, 8-ton trucks that the backs are just filled with Marines with their rifles. And they didn't have armor on them. So we reinforced them with sandbags. The hump, like, it's just crazy. So, but, you know, Marines, like, we adapt and we overcome. We just get shit done. So
is that why veterans are so good? Like, they're handy dudes? Like,
yeah,
you know,
you just have to be resourceful. Yeah, right? Yeah. Like, when you don't have the resources, you have to make it work, because you can't have an excuse for not accomplishing the mission based off of a lack of resources.
Yeah.
You know, mission accomplishment is number one, and you just have to figure a way to make it happen regardless.
Mm-hmm. So you deployed to both in regards to the Iraqi war and then, of course, the invasion of Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Iraqi war, that was beginning of my career, what I'm describing right now. Mm-hmm. My last deployment was to Afghanistan. And like both were just crazy, completely different environments. Like Iraq was, it was crazy because, you know, it was my first combat experience. I never really, like, that was the experience where you really, you know, took like active, like live fire, like getting shot at. Like, I remember the first like war zone that I went through, and Nazaria, and we're going, and it almost looked like we were in a movie scene. Like, shit. We're approaching, well, prior to even getting in the city, it was like the night before is like 4 a.m. We're just parked on the side of the road, and they ordered airstrikes into the city. So we're just watching, pitch black everywhere, and the sky's lighting up like the 4th of July.
Yeah.
Just bombs dropping left and right.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh shit, we're about to go in there.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
Next morning we hit it. And there's Marines on both sides of the street, like rounds down range, like choppers overhead, blowing shit up. We got like tanks and tracks on the corners. And I'm like on the top of the machine gun, just keeping my head on the swivel, like trying to figure out shit, dude. I don't want to get freaking, you know, shot right here. Yeah. So, and I remember like taking fire from a balcony, and we took fire, and I was like, oh shit. I tried to duck for cover and then reorientate my machine gun.
Yeah.
And then just lit up the balcony. And it was like almost like mud type adobe buildings.
Yeah.
So, you know, a 7.62 round, it'd go penetrate right through that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know if I hit him or not, because he ducked down. I lit it up, but then there was an Amtrak, or is an amphibious assault vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
He saw what I was shooting at. So he reorientated his cannons and just blew up the entire balcony. He had a like 80 millimeter freaking or 40 millimeter cannon.
Damn.
And just lit it the fuck up.
Yeah.
So that was like my first experience.
Yeah.
And I'll always remember that.
Yeah.
Decades ago, I'll still remember that. But it was a crazy, crazy experience for a young kid at the time, man.
Yeah.
I grew up very quickly.
Dude, everything you described and what you learned, talking about resourcefulness, having to adapt, mm-hmm. getting the mission done, clearly that has played a huge role with what you do today, right? You know, again, shout out to you guys for, you know, everything that you guys have done. And, you know, I don't like to get too political with my podcast, but like I said, we doing what the fuck we want on here, right? But I mean, you know... So after before we get into that discussion, after you came, you know, when you came back, mm-hmm. what was life like then? How was the transition hard going from, you know, active duty to now figuring things out and, you know, trying to live that normal life again? How hard was that for you?
Yeah, that was, I think the adjustment was, it was a little bit of difficulty adjusting. I still feel I was very blessed because I have friends that didn't adjust as well as I adjusted.
Yeah.
And
we're going to talk about that too. Your Operation Jump 22. Yeah. We'll talk about that. Yeah,
absolutely. And so for me, right upon getting back, like I remember like a month being back stateside, like there were things that just kind of triggered me. I had bad, like dreams, a lot of bad dreams.
Okay.
And I remember like I would go through, I remember a specific time I was in the valley driving down Ventura Boulevard and I had my girlfriend riding shotgun with me and we're driving and there was like some road construction going on and there was a dude with a jackhammer. Ugh. He just started like going off and I was like, oh shit, get down. I took her head and I put her head down and
fuck.
She looked at me like, what the fuck is going on? Yeah. What's the matter with you? Are you all right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh shit. I heard that and I thought we, like, for some reason it just took me back and I thought we were taking fire.
Was that the first time like an incident like that? Like, you know, PTSD or, you know, something like that?
Yeah, it kind of triggered me. Yeah. And then the second time was literally like just a few days later. I remember we were staying at a hotel one time, me and a bunch of friends, like good friend of mine, Larry Nolan, huge entrepreneur right now as well. They were all chilling with me. We went out, hit the club, and then we all stayed in my hotel. There's like probably six or eight of us in a hotel room, like on the beds, like on the floor, like
good old days.
Good old days, man. It's wild. And I remember in the middle of the night, I think I had a dream where I was back in Iraq and our position was getting overrun. Mm-hmm. And I jumped up and started yelling. And then I started kicking the door in the hotel room. I almost kicked the door open in the hotel room. And I was like yelling, you know, everyone get up. We're being overrun. And then everyone in the hotel room, they woke up. They were like, dude, what the fuck is going on in here? What are you doing? That was like the second time. I think that's as bad as it got. Uh-huh. And that was during the first couple weeks that I got back.
Wow, just the first couple weeks, huh?
Just the first couple weeks. Wow,
okay. Was that maybe the point where you started to realize like, okay, I'm definitely having some problems, or you know what I mean, I'm getting triggered. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and I think there's even to this day there's things that like kind of trigger me. And I think it's like watching, you know, combat, you know, movies that involve that. It always takes me back. It always like brings back like memories. And you know what? I don't know if it's good or not. One of the biggest issues for myself was keeping everything bottled in. I would never talk about it. I would never bring it up. And it was after that I started seeing a therapist that I started realizing that was one of the biggest problems for me.
Yeah.
Because you need to work through it. You can't just, you know, cover it up.
Yeah.
It's not going to go away.
Can't put it under the rug.
Put it under the rug or else it's going to haunt you forever.
Mm-hmm. Was that hard? And clearly, I'm asking these questions because anyone that's listening out there, whether that's something like PTSD or, you know, someone struggling with just any problem, right?
Yeah.
How hard was it for you to seek help? Like that, I feel like that's the huge barrier. That's a huge barrier in that alone. It's one recognizing like, crap, I'm going through some shit. And then the second part is like, damn, when do I seek help? Was that hard for you to seek help initially?
Yeah, it was. And I didn't seek help till literally like just a few years ago. And
okay.
So it was a while. And I think for me, and I would imagine there's a lot of veterans that possibly feel the same way, is that when you have these things that you're dealing with, you almost feel like you're a burden. Like, at least for me, I felt like I was a burden to someone else for like, tell them about problems that I'm dealing with. Cause I don't want to put my problems on someone else.
Yeah. I'm sure a lot of people feel like that.
Yeah. I want to be strong. I want to handle it myself.
Be a man, you know,
like, and there's a sense of like, probably a sense of ego as well. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to be strong. You don't want to make yourself sound weak, especially in, you know, Marine Corps infantry. You know, there's that bravado, that ego, you know, that
kind of like that would never happen to me.
Exactly. And you don't want to, you don't want people to look at you and see you as being weak for being vulnerable like that.
Yeah.
And, it wasn't until I learned that you're actually, by being vulnerable, that is being strong.
Powerful, man. Powerful.
And then, it's the exact opposite. You're weak by keeping it in.
Mm-hmm.
But when you are vulnerable and you work through it, that's showing great courage and intestinal fortitude to work through that and get through that. So it was just a lot of growth that had happened, that really helped me get through that. 'Cause there was, you know, a lot of issues. There was, I think going back to my first deployment, there was a time where we had opened fire, and unfortunately there were some innocent civilians that, you know, got killed, and you know, feeling a little bit of the responsibility for that is kind
of
hard.
Of course.
And so that was like one of the issues that, you know, it's still like, you know, I'm a lot better now, but there were some times when it was a little tough to deal with.
Course, clearly this is not something you just get over like in a year or two. This is a lifelong process battle that, you know, it's progress.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
And I think it's something that you really brought up that I really want to reinforce is, again, like how the switch of the weakness.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you may see yourself as weak, but it's actually you're weak because you're not one seeking help. Right. Yeah. And having the courage. I think that's so, so important. And then this may not even have to apply to just something like PTSD. Right. Mm-hmm. It's actually just any problems in general.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. And I think that's like a huge part. Right. So, man, very, very powerful. I mean, so obviously still a work in progress, it sounds like. I mean, what are some, you know, just and we'll leave that conversation in transition. What are other things? Obviously, we're going to jump into Operation Jump 22. What are some other, I guess you could say, triggers or maybe some behavior that definitely is out there that could possibly signal or point towards, you know, getting triggered or things like that?
Yeah, that's
great. Because I feel like some people don't know. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And yeah, for me, it was, you know, it was the things that brought back a memory. And there's some strange stuff too. And I know that there's Marines and even Army and individuals that serve that might have these same triggers, but there was such a unique, it was almost like a smell when,
interesting. Okay.
When you go through, like, I remember during the invasion of Iraq, you have, you know, burning garbage, burning vehicles, like the smell of burning oil mixed in with the smell of burning flesh.
Yeah.
And it was just a weird smell that you never had smelt before.
Yeah.
And I remember coming back stateside, there were just certain things, like, you know, when I smelt something burning, it almost kind of triggered that. It reminded me of being back in that time. Certain things like that.
See, I'm glad I bring this up because what you see in TV or like what you might think is just kind of like, oh, like the jackhammer thing, like the sounds or things like that, right? But see, it's little, even things like that, like the natural human senses, the smelling and things like that, that people might overlook.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would have never thought about that until I experienced it.
Yeah.
And I think ultimately, I think the biggest trigger was, I figured this out later, was just stress. Okay. High stress situations, anxiety, you know, you develop anxiety and you get put in high stress situations, and not having outlets, not having positive outlets, takes you into dark states.
Yeah.
And learning how to channel that inner, you know, your inner demons is really kind of what helps.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so when you don't have that, that's why alcoholism is so rampant in the veteran community, because a lot of times they don't have the positive outlets. So they turn to alcohol. They turn to, you know, the bad shit that just makes their problems worse.
Mm-hmm. So seeking help, obviously the right direction. You sought help and it was like, it sounds like it was a complete turnaround for you.
Yeah.
Complete turnaround. There was a lot of progression, a lot of, you know, improvement, right? Is that where the transition happened from, you know, Roland, you know, the Marine to Roland the entrepreneur?
I think it was just in that transition that it kind of happened. Like everything all happened at once. Okay. And it's crazy how it happened because I wasn't even an entrepreneur yet when I was going through that growth myself. Like, when I was dealing with all this, it's almost like, I feel like our destiny is already meant to be. Like, there's a greater plan for all of us and things just line up with our purpose. And so in when I was in that time of going through some really dark times in my life, I didn't know how to handle it. And you know, it was actually funny. Like, well, it's not really funny.
There's that moment. There's the funny moment.
Yeah. There was a time when, I was driving. I was just going through a tremendous amount of stress and pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And every part of my life was falling apart.
Okay.
From my military career to, you know, my relationships, my marriage, like everything was falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was on recruiting duty and I lived in Palmdale, but my duty station was all the way in Thousand Oaks. It was like almost a 2-hour drive.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember driving home. I would be driving home late at night and I would contemplate driving my car off the side of the cliff. And then I always thought that at that time, in the state of mind that I was in, I had thought that, you know what? I didn't think that people really cared about me.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought maybe if I do this, people will just miss me. They'll, you know, it was a really fucked up, really fucked up mindset that I was in.
Yeah.
So during that time, I was actually turned on to a podcast.
What's up, everyone? Wanted to step aside and just give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Podcorn. Podcorn is an amazing marketplace connecting podcasters and brands directly to collaborate. With Podcorn, podcasters of all sizes have the opportunity to find the right brand sponsorships for their podcasts. And if you're a brand, give it the voice it deserves by sponsoring ad time on a podcast. For more information, click the link in our show notes or visit their website at www.podcorn.com.
It wasn't
the parables, right?
Ironically, I think the parables like might not have even been a thought at that time. But I think you might have some inspiration from Andy Frisella, right?
Of course, yeah.
So Andy Frisella's podcast, the MFCEO podcast, that was the first time it was turned on to me. Mm-hmm. A friend referred it to me. And man, I tell you that like podcast was kind of like a godsend. I started listening to that and it really just woke me up.
Mm-hmm.
It really just forced me to like just realize, man, what the fuck are you doing with yourself? When are you going to take some accountability to improve yourself and work through the shit that you're dealing with and end up on the other side?
Yeah.
And after listening to that, I really started to realize I had a lot more control than I thought.
Yeah.
At the time I almost felt like I was helpless, but we have so much control.
Yeah.
If we just focus one step at a time.
Yeah.
Just one step at a time. That's all we need to improve upon are some of the simple things that you just need to take control of. And so that was a huge growth for me listening to that. And at the time I was transitioning out of the Marine Corps, I got medically retired. And then I got into real estate.
Yeah.
And that was basically, you know, kind of inspired by that podcast.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's when that true entrepreneur, that's when I started growing into becoming the entrepreneur. It was starting in real estate and then just mastering that, mastering my craft. And then it was later that that kind of aligned with my greater purpose of giving back to the veteran community.
Yeah, dude, that's awesome, man. You know, I get the sense, and let's discuss this just real quick.
Yeah.
Obviously, the podcast was a huge inspiration to you, right? But the way you described it, I almost feel like, you know, you said, you know, along the lines of like, when am I going to take accountability and just kind of fix my shit, basically,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, like, is it safe to say that, you know, I don't want to discredit, of course, what happened to you. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It played a huge role in your life. Of course, it affects you. It affects everyone out there, right? Yeah. But I almost feel like what you realized was like, you still let that be an excuse.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's like, what am I going to do now?
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? And I think that's the important piece I'm trying to highlight here, is that despite what happens to us and despite what we can't control, because the stuff that you went through already happened. The stuff that's happening now in this world, it already happened. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But the thing is how you react to it and holding yourself accountable. At what point are you going to allow that to dictate the direction of your life? And I feel like that's what happened with you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And now you're in real estate. Mm-hmm. How many years have you been doing that now?
About 5 years
total. About 5 years? Yeah. Damn, really? Yeah. I was like 2 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's been a while now. It goes.
Well, I think you said too, because you just said that.
It flies by, yeah.
Okay, because I think you said that you just kind of seeked help not too long ago.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. But then real estate has been in the works
for about 5 years, yeah.
Wow, interesting. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah.
We had just launched our company, though, about 2 years ago.
Oh, okay, got it.
So, yeah.
Okay.
I was getting into real estate, and then there was a lot, you know, a lot of learning going on there.
Yeah. Yeah. But how did, I guess you could say, clearly, again, rolling the Marine, all that stuff you learned, that definitely translated to who you are today and how you execute. We spoke about the, you know, being an action taker, you know, no taking, no excuses, you know, all that stuff, right? Handling pressure, getting the job done. How are you able to use those things you in the Marines to, you know, being who you are as the entrepreneur and, you know, delivering and becoming, you know, the real estate agent that you are, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Gotcha. A lot of that. So through going back,
and I bring this up too, because I feel like some people discredit the capabilities and the abilities and the talent that they already have, right? Yeah. You have that experience in your life. You just maybe overlook it. I do that sometimes with myself too. I'm like, dude, I went through the hardest things with my nursing career and nursing school. And I'm like, damn, if I got through that shit, how can I not get through, figure out all this other stuff? And I feel it's the same way with you, right?
Yeah, so true. And this is a, man, you know what? This is such a great point that it just kind of takes me back to our greater purpose in my journey into kind of, not really overcoming, but working through, you know, PTSD and these types of issues. See, when a part of this exploration process, I realized that a lot of issues that service members have is when they separate from service, they feel like the best part of their lives are behind them. They lose that sense of
purpose. Almost like you went to college football, you didn't make it to the pros type of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, those careers are short lived.
Yeah.
And when you leave that, you get depressed because you feel like you don't have purpose anymore. You lose that sense of purpose.
Like your identity's kind of gone.
Your identity's kind of gone. And throughout my foundation and, you know, Operation Jump 22, which we'll cover that here in a little bit, but we partnered up with another organization, Merging Vets and Players. Mm-hmm. They partner up combat veterans with former professional athletes.
That's awesome.
And you'll really find some alignment there with professional athletes, especially like former NFL football players. They have very short-lived careers. And them too, they feel like when they take that uniform off, they lose their purpose as well. They feel like the best part of their lives are behind them.
So they align.
So really they well. Align well with veterans, yeah. plus the traumatic brain injuries, and the concussions, the same symptoms. And then it's just such an amazing program because there's great training, there's great mentorship programs because most professional athletes, they look up to veterans. Yeah. And then vice versa, the veterans look up to the professional athletes. But one of the things that was so enlightening that you really started to discover about yourself is it wasn't the individual that you were when you were serving or when you were playing professional sports. It was what was in here. It was what was inside you that got you to that point.
Yeah.
Less than 1% of our nation really serve in the military.
Mm-hmm. So it's, I did not know that.
Yeah. Less than 1% really serve in the military. So there's a lot of hard work, dedication, and it's not the uniform that you wear. Mm-hmm. It's the individual that you become to get there. And if you apply that to any other part of your life, you're going to be just as successful and you're going to make even more of an impact.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we tend to lose. We tend to forget that, you know, after serving. And it's important to remember, like, man, you know, everything that made us successful is still inside of us.
Yeah.
We just need to apply that to other areas of our life.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, it was, you know, talking about, you know, when I woke up and taking that accountability, you know, it's really easy for us to be that victim and to be in that victim mode and to always talk about, like, you know, the bad cards that we were dealt or the circumstances, you know, to whether we want people to feel bad for us or whatever the case. It's not until we flip that and take accountability on how we can change that.
Yeah.
And flip the script that we start to be aligned with becoming successful. Mm-hmm. And
how do you think some people can harness that? You know what I'm saying? Like, obviously seeking help, right? But what are maybe some tips you think, aside from seeking help, which might obviously be the obvious solution, I guess, or maybe the only solution, who knows, right?
Yeah.
But, and then, you know, like, how can they harness that again?
Right? I think the issue is, like, seeking help can be so broad that people, like, they don't even know how to seek help, like, really.
Yeah.
Like, when you say seek help, like, what does that even look like?
What does that fucking mean?
Yeah. You call a 1-800 number? I don't want to fucking call a 1-800 number, you know?
Like, it's like an automated voice.
Talk to some fucking shrink who's going to tell me I'm fucking crazy anyway, like, or
press be one if you're feeling this way.
If you have thoughts about killing yourself, hang up and dial 911. The fuck out of here.
Yeah.
So I think the big thing is, like, there's a lot of resources. And I think what was huge for me is finding like-minded individuals that you can connect with and other vets, like, that you could tell your story to.
Yeah.
Because more than likely, they've dealt with it themselves. And it becomes really empowering when you talk about the shit that you're going through. Mm-hmm. One of the things that really helped me, like, find my passion was when I talked about shit that I'm going through.
Yeah.
Like, people hear that and they can relate. And then they hear that and, like, oh shit,
I'm not the only one.
I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not as fucked up as I thought I was.
Yeah.
And you become, you help that individual by doing that. That can be an awakening. That can be an awakening point for that individual that might save their lives.
Yeah.
And, like, I remember, so there was this, so Operation Jump 22, it's a nonprofit. It's a skydiving event. Ironically, we jump out of a perfectly good airplane to help prevent veteran suicide.
I'm going to put that in the show description notes, guys. Incredible nonprofit.
So we do this event each year. And recently we made this commercial, which is, man, it's pretty graphic. And I was really hesitant upon filming it because, without completely giving it away, like I'm myself in the video, and it's taken me through some dark points where I take a gun to my head,
yeah,
and I really contemplate pulling the trigger.
Yeah.
And I was actually attempting to kill myself.
Yeah.
It just didn't work out that way.
Yeah.
And I was really hesitant to filming that. But we did anyway.
Just because and it might be just too sensitive and yeah,
just too dark.
Yeah.
Too graphic. But we did. And that it was a promotional video for our event. And it wasn't even a month that went by. There was a veteran that reached out to me. He emailed me and he said, "Hey, I just want to let you know, I was literally contemplating taking my own life and I saw your commercial."
Wow.
And man, it gets me choked up right now just thinking about it.
Yeah.
You know, because I've been there.
Yeah.
And you know, hearing that and seeing that was like, man, this is powerful that what we're doing. And that's what really brought even more passion into it, because, you know, there's tons of impact that we can make. Yeah. And something little like that. So going back to your question is how, you know, how do we make that happen? It can be as little as connecting with other vets,
yeah,
and telling your story. Because when you do that, you help others.
Yeah.
And we feel the best when we're of service to others.
Oh man, powerful. Yeah. It's just like, you know, exactly what you said. We spoke about vulnerability, how powerful mm-hmm. that is, right? It takes courage to do that, but what you don't realize is when you do share your story, right? Kind of like, again, mm-hmm. like this platform, this is my platform, Operation Jump 22 is your platform,
yeah,
right? You're yeah. able to send a message out there that you may not think someone may resonate or align with, but in reality is it does. And that could possibly save someone's life, yeah, that could change someone's the trajectory of their path or where they're headed, right? So dude, it's very, very powerful, man. I love what you're doing, man. It's incredible, dude. Again, I'm gonna put that in I didn't attend the last event, freaking EJ, right? But I plan on attending this, you know, your event that's coming up, hopefully with COVID.
Yeah.
I would imagine COVID's doing a little impact on it.
Yeah, who knows? I think so. 2020 might be a scratch. More than likely, it's going to be a scratch. But okay, 2021, we're going to come back strong. It's going to be epic, like bigger than ever.
Yeah.
It'll definitely be an event.
That's quadruple the freaking exposure and the mm-hmm. awareness for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about a little about real estate, and then we're going to get into a little fun stuff because I want to definitely pick your brain and just things that are happening with the world. So real estate, Romeo Echo, real estate is your firm, about 2 years in the making.
Yeah, 2 years, ground floor. Like we're literally still perfecting our systems and stuff. And mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I'm not going to give away his secrets, but he's been giving me some insight on what they're doing, and it is incredible. In fact, I was walking my dog with my wife, and I was telling her some of the stuff you're telling me, how to separate yourself.
Yeah.
You know, again, separation season, guys, for COVID-19. Don't let this be an excuse. But I was telling her, and I was like, dude, you can't separate yourself even more than that. That's crazy, man.
No, I appreciate that. It all, you know, it all started by focusing on, you know, the challenges and problems. Like the reason why Romeo Echo is even a company was based off of problems in the marketplace. Like me, myself is a veteran. The first time I bought a home, the system was pretty broken. I bought a home and I was referred to this agent that was supposed to be a veteran specialist. Veteran specialist. Man, that was as far from the truth as possible.
Yeah.
He couldn't tell me, like, it's like you ask him the question, like, so what do I have to do to get a VA loan? Oh, well, you got to be a veteran. Like,
please press one. Yeah,
no shit. Like, so, you know, that, like, I didn't know any better because this is the first time I bought a house.
Yeah.
But looking back now, it's like, man, knowing, like being in the industry, I was like, man, that could have saved me thousands of dollars. Yeah. And then my business partner now, Adam, I was talking to him. He had a very similar experience as well, where, you know, you literally like you there was clearly a problem. So right from the get-go, we started seeing the vision, like, man, it would be amazing if we can create a company that just specializes in helping vets, but masters the ins and outs of everything VA.
Yeah.
And are just masters of our craft to be able to provide that value to the veteran community. And because it's really easy. Everyone can put veteran on this and veteran of, on that. Yeah. And they truly just, there's a lot of dirt bags out there, man. Is it really what it comes down
to? Or like, you know, owned by veterans.
Yeah,
or
owned by veterans. Yeah, and there's a lot of individuals that are out there for the wrong reasons. Yeah. And so we just really wanted to change that. And so it started by just learning the ins and outs of the VA, like the ins and outs, the loopholes. What are the most common challenges that veterans face when they purchase a home, getting qualified to purchase a home? And then we started just creating solutions to where even with like, in order to get a loan, you have to get a certificate of eligibility for the VA. Well, I don't know if you've ever tried to get anything from the VA, but it's freaking hard as fuck.
It's a process.
It's so we're like, all right, well, how can we make this better? Well, why don't we just do it for them and get the certificate of eligibility for them? Let's do all this stuff for them and just really bring full service into it. So it started with that. Then it started with, okay, how do we teach these veterans like different ways that they can save thousands of dollars when they purchase a home? Mm-hmm. Certain things like getting your funding fee, which is typically 3% of the loan amount of the home that you're purchasing. How do we get that 3% funding fee waived?
Yeah.
So then we teach veterans how they can do that. Like, you know, you on a $500,000 home, that's $15,000.
Shit, that's a lot of money.
man, you can almost buy a dang car for that. So, so little things like that. And then, we're lifelong students, you know, being in Arte, we take all of the things that Ed and Andy teach us and we bring that into our business to create like better customer experience. Like, so we're constantly trying to improve and get better, trying to perfect it. And, that's where we're at, man. We're just trying to like perfect the system and constantly grow and improve the game and ultimately just bring a better customer experience is what it comes down to.
I think it's amazing that type, it's a specific niche and you're tailoring to assert, you know, a specific market, right? And a community.
Yeah.
And, you know, just exactly what you spoke about, like imagine a veteran going through that process, kind of like what you did, and it was a complete mess, a shit show, right?
Absolutely.
And imagine if that, and again, everything's a learning experience, but imagine if something, you know, something was a little more, you know, systematic, you know, they were able to save money. Imagine how much that could have given them a boost, you know what I'm saying? To start their life.
Start their life.
Right? You know? Yeah. And we always talk about compounding, like we're talking about like, you know, compounding like different compounding events in that person's life.
Absolutely.
You know, if you're able to save them that much money. So I love it, man.
Save them that much money. And you know what? One of the things recently that we started even expanding on is, and I think what really sets us apart from like any other, you know, real estate company out there is we don't just focus on real estate. We focus on bettering their lives.
Yeah.
So especially when the veterans come in, like, you know, the first thing typically when you meet a realtor or a loan, they just want to focus on getting you a home.
Yeah.
Like where we focus on the veteran's life and like making sure they're taken care of with their benefits through the VA.
Yeah.
You know, we don't get paid on that, but ultimately we're making that veteran's life better by making sure that they got their benefits and everything that they rightfully have earned from service.
Yeah.
So that's like we focus on serving first and then the business will come later.
Yeah.
And, you know, even working with you with, you know, the Miliari Group is one of the ways that we just can provide more value and things that we're kind of implementing to even like help them, you know, take their benefits and create wealth as well. Like overall, just improve their overall lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, again, not only is it, you know, we discussed this, not only is it complementing kind of your business, but technically it's also complementing what you guys are trying to do. And again, that's serve the veteran as a person, not just like a transaction.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Absolutely love it, man.
Yeah.
Dude, man, that's incredible. So Romeo Echo Real Estate Operation Jump 22. I'm going to leave the links in the show notes. Let's get into some fun stuff. Not playing. But dude, man, I appreciate you rolling, you know, coming on and tell your story. Very, very powerful stuff. I really think this could really impact and touch a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Again, part of the parables, we want to get your story. And my goal is to always magnify your message and the impact you guys are trying to make. So let's talk about everything that's happening now. And maybe let's get into, again, I'm doing this off the jump.
Yeah.
Maybe let's start talking about what's happening right now. Maybe how people can get ahead. Because I think a lot of people are just so fucking distracted right now with all the events, whether that's the election coming up, whether that's COVID, you know, just everything that's going on, right? The sex trafficking stuff, just all this BS with social media and just, you know, what are some things that you think people can do to just get ahead and not get so distracted right now?
Man, it's wild. It's been a wild year. That's a great question. I mean, even a question that I like constantly take in, and I think I always like take a step back and like try to just make sure that I'm getting ahead myself and, you know, help others as well. But I think, in getting ahead right now, I think first is determining what you want, like determining like what getting ahead even looks like for you.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have a destination that you want to get to or something that you want to achieve, then you're lost.
Yeah.
Then it's really easy to get sidetracked with all the bullshit going on right now.
Yeah.
So it's like figuring out like, okay, where are you at on your job? Do you have a job?
Okay.
You know, do you still have a job? If not, okay, what are some things that you would like to do? What are some things that you can build a passion behind?
Mm-hmm.
If you do have a job, does that job pay you sufficiently? If not, well, there's not a better time than to pick up a side hustle than right now. Like COVID technology, like, it's a perfect opportunity to pick up a side hustle. So like, okay, then your income, if you're not at an adequate income, just figure it out. And then tap into the resources to help you achieve that.
Yeah.
So like when it comes to that, like figuring out what it is that you want to pick up and then look to reach out to the people that you need in order to make that a reality, in order to make it happen pretty much.
Yeah.
And then aside from that is like, now that's just talking about the physical stuff. There's a lot of intangible stuff. There's a lot of mindset stuff going on right now.
And absolutely.
Really easy to get in a really shitty state of mind with everything that you see.
To join the shit show.
Yeah, it's a shit show. You open up open up your freaking your phone and it's like, man, child sex trafficking, like Black Lives Matter, like people getting killed.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like you're just torn in between and like people are like, you know, talking shit to you if you don't post and if you don't support this cause, then they're like, they're lashing out to you saying like, what's wrong with you? And whether you post, whether you're silent, you can't win.
No matter what. Yeah.
And, so it's like, man, that's tough, man.
Yeah. Well, what are your thoughts on, I mean, for me, I just kind of feel like, again, it's kind of like what you said, just piggyback what you said.
Yeah.
I feel like no matter what you do, you're not going to please that triggered person. You get what I'm saying? You don't post, then you don't care. You do post, and then they disagree with you, and you're missing the fucking point.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And, you know, again, everyone has an opinion out there, and I'm just so torn, and it's been very, I don't want to say depressing, it's just been really, I don't know what the word I want to use, like hurtful. Or it's just been really sad, I guess, to see how we're treating each other as brothers and sisters. You get what I'm saying? Like, since when could we not disagree and still be civil? You get what I'm saying? True. Like, yeah. I mean, like, I just don't understand. Like, you know what I mean? Of course, everyone comes from a different experience, different background, different circumstances. They were brought up a different way, right? But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, we're all human. Why can't we respect each other? You know, why can't I try to understand? And even if I don't, still have respect. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just incredible how we've kind of, I don't know, separated. And I feel like there's so much tension right now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If I wear something like a MAGA hat, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I feel like I'd get hit by a bat or something. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Well, depending on what neighborhood you
live in. Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
I mean, someone might give you a beer.
Go to Inglewood, see what happens. Yeah, and go to San Francisco, see what happens. You know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. But I'm actually very curious to know, being a veteran yourself. Uh-huh.
Yes.
I have actually veteran friends that think differently. Like, they have different views. It's like 50-50, left, right, whatever it may be, right? But how do you feel about people so-called disrespecting the flag, kneeling, and things like that? And guys, again, this is just open dialogue. You know, you could disagree. That's fine. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't reflect on who I am, EJ Cruz, or who Roland is, right?
Yeah.
It's just an opinion. It's just kind of like where we stand, and that's all it is. Right.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I'm curious to know, because I see veterans think like one, like all four, and then the other's like, man, fuck that. Like, you don't know, you know, that's disrespectful. What do you think?
Yeah.
What are your
thoughts? All right.
get the whiskey.
All right. Yeah. All right. So now here's my stance on it. You know, the fact that we went out, served our country, risked our lives. I have really good friends that didn't make it back. They got killed overseas to provide for our freedom and our way of life.
Yeah.
When there is a, when there is an injustice, if individuals feel that there's an injustice, they have every right to kneel during the national anthem. You know, we actually fight for that same right for them to be able to do that and express themselves.
Yeah.
So for me, that's kind of like my stance. Just like right now, there's a lot of backlash with individuals that don't want to kneel, like the dude on the Giants, like for standing up.
Yeah.
He equally has that right to stand up when he doesn't align with something. That's our right.
And all of a sudden he's the bad person. It's crazy. Yeah.
And you know what? I got a really good friend that, you know, Nate Boyer, that he was actually the one that gave Kaepernick the advice to kneel.
Wow.
They flew him out there. So there was really big at the time. Like, if you remember when it first came about, individuals weren't kneeling, they were sitting down.
Yeah.
And when you sit, that can actually look disrespectful. So by changing it from sitting to kneeling, you're actually providing a little bit more respect, because when you have a soldier that gets killed overseas, you're going to kneel for him.
Yeah.
You have the battlefield cross set up with his rifle, his dog tags. Man, it just gave me goosebumps right now. You know, the dog tags are hanging. You kneel and you touch those dog tags.
Yeah.
So that was his advice. Like, you know what? Instead of sitting, take a kneel. And I think maybe your message can be perceived a little differently.
And that's a veteran.
And that's a veteran that gave this advice.
Wow.
And
I know that.
So then I think where it really gets blown out of proportion is the fucking media.
Of course.
How they perceive that story. Like, you know, kneeling, that's one thing. Like, then they create all this emotion in by showing like socks of pigs, and then they get people fighting with each other, and that's what's wrong.
Yeah.
But the they have, that's their right. They have every right to do that, just like I have every right to not do that.
Yeah.
And we can have completely different views, and that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. It's okay to have completely different views on, and we can still be friends. Like, even with, you look at some really radical differences, like, and when we're talking a little bit of politics, I'm going to bring religion into it as well.
Yeah.
Like, you have these two different, far different religions, Muslims and Christians.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that a lot of it just comes to being open-minded. Excuse me. A lot of times when we're open-minded, we can learn and we can grow and we can move forward as a nation.
Yeah.
Just be open-minded and realize that people, just because they're different, a lot of times they want happiness just like us.
Yeah.
And so in my last deployment to Afghanistan, we deployed and we're deploying, like, that's a primarily Muslim culture over there.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people, if they don't have a lot of knowledge on the Muslim religion, you know, I've seen ignorant people say, oh, Muslims are terrorists.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not.
Just some bullshit. Yeah.
It's some bullshit. It's the Muslim religion and
generalizing, basically.
Yeah, generalizing and not really knowing, not being closed-minded.
Yeah.
And I had one of my personal interpreters, his name's Abdul Nasir. And man, I grew such a close bond with that individual. We have two completely different religious backgrounds, but we created such a close bond because we were there in a war zone, like, you know, helping each other. He was helping me, I was helping him. We developed such a close bond. He had a son and named his son after me.
Wow.
That's something that we were, as you know, completely two different individuals, but just by being open-minded and listening to where he's coming from, not lashing out at him or trying to change him, like trying to be right.
Yeah.
Trying to be right is where we, I think we grew the most. And I think that's where we can be right now, is just be open-minded.
Yeah.
Stop trying to be right. And of course, I mean, there's a lot of shit going on that, I mean, I could say it's just that, but
yeah.
You know, that'll help. There's so much, like, man, there's
everyone's
so
just trying craziness. To win this argument.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, it's like two sides.
Yeah.
Everyone's just trying to win this verbal fucking war. And then there's these other people who are trying to play, like, the bigger victim.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, I just don't understand what the intent with that. Is it for attention? Is it because, you know, you have an agenda? Like, you know what I'm saying? And that's where I feel like that's where you have to be open-minded and start to realize, like, hey, like, I don't know, how can we move forward? Like, why can't we have respect for one another? If I disagree with you, cool. Okay. I don't jive with that, but hey, like, I don't have to hate you. You get what I'm saying? Yeah. You're still a human being. You still have your own family. You're still trying to make a good living in America. You're still trying to, I don't know, do the American dream. But it's just wild to me how, you know, I don't know. I just feel it's super wild. You know, in regards to the media, it's funny though, because we spoke about the media.
Yeah.
But then, like, at the same time, like, you brought up the socks. Yeah. But, like, why would you wear that too? Like, it's almost kind of like you're like trolling.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So I'm not too, you know, I just sometimes, like, when you recognize and you identify these patterns and behaviors, then it begins to question, like, well, dude, like, so where do you stand or what are you trying to do?
What is your intent?
Yeah. So I don't know. That's very, very interesting, man.
Yeah. I think we just, like, just not to get caught up and then just go, like, your original question, like, what do we do right now? It's just, you just got to look deep within yourself and what's right, and not get too wrapped up and caught up with what you see.
Yeah.
You know, think for yourself, you know, do research, do, you know, think critically and just live your life. Do what makes you happy and stand up for what you believe and what you stand for, regardless of what's popular.
Yeah.
And I think that you'll be good with that, because it's, you don't know what to believe now. You know, it's like one channel saying one thing, one channel saying the other. People are saying to wear a mask. People are saying not to wear a mask. People are saying, oh, let's, you know, COVID's fake. COVID's man-made.
Man, I got my own opinions too. I'm just not trying to get fired right now, you know?
Yeah. So, it's, oh man, I'm, you know what? I feel like just popping up some popcorn and just watching it as well. Like, let's see what happens in November.
Some,
like,
grabbing some tea too, Kermit the Frog, you know?
Yeah.
But what, you know, I think real quick before we end it off a little bit, how can people be part of the solution, right? What does that look like for me? And I want to get your, you know, your advice, but for me, I think being a part of the solution and trying to make the world a better place is to, you know, maybe you can't, you know, make everyone happy, right? Yeah. But you could make the world a better place by your actions, mm-hmm. right? If you want to bring awareness to sex trafficking, you know, then do it, right? If Absolutely. You feel there's inequality, mm-hmm. prove it with your actions, whether that's a peaceful protest, whether that's if someone is talking, you know, having racial language, what are you going to do about it? You're going to stand up yeah. for it? You know what I'm saying? It's all in your actions, right? And sometimes I almost feel like people have to prove to others that they're doing yeah. something. And it's kind of yeah. like, why? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. just, I don't want to say like prove it to yourself, but just lead with intent and, you know, just take action. You know what I'm yeah, saying? Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
No, I get it. No, that's a freaking great point, bro. Like, you know, I think ultimately, like, you can only do what you can. People have different platforms. People have different power, levels of power. They'll be able to make larger, you know, a larger impact based off of their platforms and where they're at in their lives. So I think ultimately it comes down to do what you're passionate about and whatever you have power to do. Like, even in terms of like creating awareness on something, like that's, you know, creating improvement, you know, focusing on like in developing a solution, it's finding solutions,
yeah,
find solutions to the issues. Like, if there's issues that we're dealing with right now, you know, help finding solutions for that. Like yeah. making recommendations on even the small granular level.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, like, it's really easy with problems that are so big to feel that, man, like, I'm just one person. Am I going to change the world? No, you might not change the world, but for an individual, you might be able to change their world.
Mm-hmm.
And you're making an impact just yeah. with one person.
Yeah. Oh, I like what you said. You know, at a granular level.
Yeah.
Right? You don't have to, like, you don't need approval, mm-mm. you know what I'm saying, from yeah. anyone else just to start taking that small action.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I feel like sometimes people are looking for that approval mm-hmm. almost. It's like, I need this reinforcement, or I need yeah. to know this is okay before I can make this impact. It's like, no, you don't need that. Just
yeah.
just fucking do it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I don't know. Anyway, I love it, man. I love you were able to give us the insight. I appreciate you guys listening on the podcast. And if you're watching this, Roland, where can people find you if they want to reach out to you? Again, Romeo Echo Real Estate, his IG handle, Operation Jump 22. I'm going to leave that all in the description notes so you guys could get in contact if you want to contribute or donate. But where can people find you if they want to reach out to you, maybe collaborate with you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know? So you can send me an email to my web. I think the best chance of connecting is probably through IG. I'm pretty regularly on there. Shoot me a DM. For those that really, you can reach out to EJ and I'll let you use your judgment. You can give him my personal number if you feel like EJ will be the gatekeeper right there. I trust your judgment, brother.
All right, got you.
But yeah, I'm with like any way that I can help with the cause or help you with your cause. I'm a huge believer in empowering veterans, even if it's advising you on building a business. I'm here for you guys. So mm-hmm. appreciate it,
dude. You guys can't miss this guy's IG profile picture, by the way. I promise you, you'll know it's this motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Well, dude, I appreciate you guys listening and watching. Guys, if you could do me a favor, if you know this episode can impact someone, especially in the veteran community, shoot this over to them. You know, let's try to magnify the message and spread it out there as much as possible. If you are watching and listening, also, do us a favor. Let me and Roland know that you're tuning in, and let us know what you think. You can also help with reviews, Apple Podcasts. It helps with visibility. Again, our goal here is to really magnify not only Roland, but definitely his message and what he's trying to do. Last but not least, brother, you know you got to sign the infamous canvas, baby.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Man. So for sure.
I've seen all these videos.
For sure, guys. Well, Parables Podcast, we are out of here. Roland Vandenberg, Q.